He's on your afternoon drive, tackling hot topics inside the Central Valley.
Huge play from Nico Remigio. He's a Bulldog for one season, but that play makes him a Bulldog for life.
From high schools to Fresno State, Gabe Camarillo is the authority on local sports.
Clovis West girls, seeing them beat the number 7 team in the state by 21 points tells me that this is a state championship contender.
And now, here he is to give you home field advantage.
Good afternoon, Central Valley, live from the ESPN Radio Studios across the street from Bullard High School. I'm Gabe Camarillo, and you, my friends, have home field advantage for the next 2 hours on your local sports leader, 1430 ESPN Fresno. Yeah, the Clovis West girls, we'll find out tonight if they have state championship stuff. One win away from Sacramento in the open division, Clovis West travels to Archbishop Mitty for a spot in the open final. Archbishop Mitty is the number one team in the country, mind you. And so we'll talk about that game a little bit today. We'll talk about a lot of what's happening on this Tuesday. Not your average Tuesday, obviously. It's election day. Hope this Tuesday's treated you well. It's a big one for Fresno State. You hope it treats them well as well. Just with Measure E, you know it by now, a 0.25% countywide sales tax. That's a quarter of a cent of any purchase besides the necessary ones. It's not going to be added on to basic necessities like food. It will not apply to rent or groceries, gas or utilities. But anything else, fair game for this tax, 0.25% countywide. A quarter of a cent for every $4 purchase, and it's going to fund programs and improvements for Fresno State, generating $63 million a year for 25 years. We'll talk a lot about this in the local headlines. It is the biggest local headline today because you could argue it's going to determine the future of Fresno State as a university and as an athletic program. I'll tell you this right now, though, before we get too in-depth with it. The mayor's on board. Jerry Dyer quoted in the, I believe it was, interview he did yesterday on KC and CBS, quote, "The reality is the state of California hasn't paid for it," talking about Fresno State refurbishments. "At some point in time, we take things into our own control, and hopefully we pass this measure," end quote. At some point in time, we take things into our own control. That's what this measure is all about. Not relying on anyone else to take care of us. Because you know how people treat Fresno in other parts of California. People in San Francisco think of us as the armpit. People in LA don't even acknowledge us. It's on us, the Fresno County people, to provide for ourselves. We provide for others all the time with our agriculture. Now I think it's time for the taxpayers to provide for themselves with a good university that's up to date, at least ADA compliant. That's what I was talking about. Fresno State has a big day today, and the future relies on the voters passing Measure E. Last time we saw it, it fell short by about 6,000. So you need to convince 6,000 people from no to yes, or get 6,000 more people to vote this time around that didn't vote 2 years ago when it failed. We'll see how it goes. I'll tell you what, if you're Fresno State, you didn't sleep well last night because of all the anxiousness on whether this will pass or not. The question swirling through the mind, if not now, when? If not from us, then from who? I'll tell you what, I didn't sleep well last night either. But for a different reason, though. I went to bed at like 7 p.m. I was so exhausted yesterday after work. And then I woke up at like 2 a.m. and all of a sudden it's like, okay, dang it. I messed up my sleep schedule. Now I can't go back to bed. Eventually, I did an hour later, but it's just a night of sleeplessness for a lot of people last night. That's what I'm trying to say. I also had a bit of a cough too, but I'm not under the weather. I want to let you that know right now. Whole family is going through it right now. I'm not, and I'm trying to stay away respectfully, not trying to get sick in this big week for me as well. As you know, this is my last week on the air with you guys. Not under the weather. But speaking of the weather, good time to update you on the forecast. Thanks to our friends at Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating. You know the program. You know how the show works. We give you the Lee's Air Weather Report to start every day. And today, it's 65 degrees, mostly cloudy. That's the high. As far as the low tonight, it's going to go down to 42. And I told you yesterday, I'll tell you again today, it's going to get warm this weekend. Nothing but sunshine Friday, 67 is the high. Then it reaches 70 on Saturday, partly cloudy, before dipping back down to the mid-60s next week. Best time of the year, in my opinion. Mid-60s, sunshine, cloud coverage every now and then. Enjoy this while you can, because in a month from now, it'll be 80, 90, and then you'll wish you had the 60s. But this weather report, again, brought to you by Lizaire Plumbing and Heating. They've kept Fresno homes safe and comfortable for 40 years. All right, so now that we got that out of the way, one more business to take care of. What's the rundown look like? So we're going to have high school baseball as a heavy focus this hour. Going to talk about the games last night, talk about the games today to keep an eye on. Jim Cranford from Kingsburg High. He's the eighth-year baseball head coach for the Vikings, who are 4-2 and shut out Clovis West at Stan Bledsoe Field last night. So we'll talk about that win and the season to come for the Vikings, who look like the favorites to win Division III again, looking to go back-to-back after beating Dos Palos 7-5 last year. So we'll talk to Coach Cranford of Kingsburg at 3:20. Then we'll continue on with some of the hottest baseball teams right now in the Valley. 4 o'clock, we'll talk to David Tangipa, who is part of the election today. He's running for state assembly. Not going to necessarily get into the politics of it, but just the reason behind it. Why is this former Fresno State football player running for office in anything, right? Not often do you see someone make that move from college football star. And I'll tell you what, Tangipa was a valuable special teamer. We'll get into his Bulldog football career. But I just really want to know why. And I think a lot of people want to know as well. But I also would like to hear Tangipa's stories as a Bulldog more than anything else. He's going to come on at 4:02. And then we'll transition to the current crop of Fresno State football players, give you my thoughts on the receiver room. Also, if we have time, Jackson Moore wrote a great piece on Barkboard. It's the VIP article on the running backs. I want to get to that if we have some time in hour two. Half hour, or second half hour, hour two. It's going to be all high school basketball. Paul Hernandez of Nothing But Net Magazine joins us. It's going to be our all-central section teams and the comeback player of the year, the defensive player of the year, coach of the year, most improved player, kind of like the NBA awards, but for our Central Valley Hoopsters, and the coveted MVP. We'll give our awards and all section teams at 4:30, myself and Paul Hernandez. Last thing before we get into Measure E, our biggest local headline today, follow along on social media. I'll try my best to keep you updated with the happenings of the measure, if it passes or not. We will probably not know today. We'll probably know tomorrow or Thursday because of the late votes that'll go in. In fact, I'm going to be part of those late votes because between my workout this morning and between getting ready for the show and other stuff I had to take care of, errands on a weekday, I need to do it after. I'm voting after the show today. So yeah, that's going to be something to monitor on social media. Find us on Twitter at 1430ESPN or on Instagram too, and follow yours truly at Gabe Camarillo _. Last name spelled like the beautiful city on the coast, Camarilloand _. Add that to it, please, so you can follow me on X or on Instagram. And we'll all be following along, I would imagine, to what happens tonight with Measure E. Again, it's a 0.25% countywide sales tax on any purchase outside of rent, groceries, your gas for your car, or utilities. It doesn't count for those. Everything else, though, it will be tacked onto a cent for every $4 purchase. And of course, if it's $8 and it's 2 cents, ideally if it's $20, it's 5 cents. I think that's the big opposition against this, is it accumulates if you're going to, let's say, Macy's to go buy yourself a suit. I say that because that's what I'm going to do after the show as well. I have a busy day today, as you can tell. The question is, for me, first and foremost, in order to understand the value of this measure, you have to understand life without this measure. Like the question, what happens if Measure E doesn't pass? What does Fresno State look like? And what can happen to Fresno State if this measure isn't going to pull through? I'll tell you this. People say there's money that the CSU has that they can spend on Fresno State. This is the biggest point that the opposite side brings up. When the labor union representing Cal State University faculty went on their strike, this past January, they made the argument that the CSU system had over $8 billion in total reserves in 2022. But that's one fact that they'll throw at you. What you don't understand is what Sao Jimenez Sandoval, the president of the university, told ABC 30 in a recent article. He said, quote, "It isn't within the budget of the CSU to provide me with funds that allow me to plan ahead and to innovate," end quote. So for those that argue it's not on the county to take care of this, it's on the state, it's on the CSU system. Sure, the CSU has money, but just because they have money doesn't mean they'll spend it on you. Fresno State has learned that the hard way with its aging facilities. Again, how close was Measure E to passing 2 years ago? Well, a difference of 6,000 votes, which means 6,000 no's that need to be 6,000 yeses. And that was for a tax that was honestly a little bit easier to swallow, 0.2%. So a cent for every $5 purchased for over 20 years. Now it's 0.25%. So it's raised a cent for one less dollar. So a cent for $4 instead of a cent for $5 over 25 years. This might turn people off. But what I'll tell you is this. The CSU system has been in the business of supporting everyone else besides Fresno State. They issued bonds for San Jose State's $70 million stadium upgrade. They issued $225 million in bonds for San Diego's Snapdragon Stadium. And San Diego State will repay that through ticket sales. They'll also, you know, probably use these permanent seat licenses. I read that in an article. They also have philanthropy, so that's how they raised about $85 million just in donations. Here's the difference between San Diego and San Jose and Fresno State, okay? Fresno State doesn't get the money or respect, and they've asked for it. I've heard local radio, people calling in a program saying, actually, we've asked them for some help. We've asked the state, and it's not coming. I think Soria was one of the people who called in to a local station last week. It was just kind of sad to read these numbers. CSU helping San Jose State, CSU helping San Diego State, and Fresno State's honestly been in more dire straits for longer than these schools. Okay? San Diego was playing in an NFL stadium. Now, obviously, NFL left San Diego, so Qualcomm Stadium became a relic, but they were still in a better situation than Fresno State's been in for the last 10 years. Bulldog Stadium has needed help, has needed some upgrades to be ADA compliant, has just needed a makeover for the last 10 years, let's say. Maybe longer than that. San Jose State needed help too. But the difference is the CSU system helped them but didn't help the Bulldogs. So you're relying, if you're voting against Measure E, you're relying on the CSU system to finally pull through, and it hasn't, but it has for others. It's not the end of the world if this tax doesn't pass. But it's not likely that Fresno State gets the help they need. So you're basically passing the buck to an unreliable and very spotty helper that's supposed to help you but doesn't. Okay. So let me go through the two scenarios that will come to a head tonight. We'll finally stop voting on this tonight. We'll find out maybe tomorrow. If it will pass, if it won't pass. It will pass if the different messaging got through. And people realize Fresno State is the best thing this town has to offer. Because you look at Fresno. Chukchansey Park is cool. Has the Bylas every now and then. Has some good baseball. But more people go to Fresno State football games than go to baseball games at Chukchansey Park. So that just shows you Fresno State's bigger than, I think, Chukchansey Park. Now let's look at Celand Arena. Okay, you have the Central Section Basketball Finals. One weekend a year for Celand Arena. Six times a year for Fresno State football. And, of course, everyone will point to the different concerts at the Save Mart Center. Those don't help us here locally. It helps the artist that comes through Fresno. It helps the Save Mart Center, which notoriously found a way to make money off Fresno State when Fresno State built that arena. Fresno State makes very little that comes through the Save Mart Center, so it doesn't help the university at all to have the Save Mart Center be successful. In fact, now we're seeing less big-name artists go to the Save Mart Center. But I already talked about this. My point is, look at everything that Fresno has to offer. Save Mart Center, Celand Arena. I'm sorry, but Disney on Ice at the Sun Arena isn't as big as what Fresno State can bring. And I'm not just talking about the athletic stuff, because obviously that's the focus here on ESPN Radio. But I'm talking about the bigger nursing building. Heck, the new nursing building they have to have. And also expand the one they currently do. Heck, Tim Orman was on the show yesterday, and he said the nursing building was built 2 years after he was born. And he's an older gentleman, so it just goes to show you how long it's been around. And if something's been around that long, you need to renovate it and build a new one. Expand the nursing building, expand the engineering building. There's a lot of stuff that Fresno State needs, but people are willing to say, not on my dime. So if people realize Fresno State's the best thing this town has to offer from an education standpoint, from an entertainment standpoint, from a community standpoint, then they'll vote for this. That's why it will pass. It won't pass if people realize that 1 cent on every $4 will add up. It won't pass if people in this town are content with where the town is and where the university is. It's a family town. A lot of families live here. And that's a good thing about it. It's good that people feel secure in Fresno to raise a family. It's a community of hardworking people. I think that's why people gravitate to here from the bigger cities, who are tired of the big city lifestyle, want a slower pace. Fresno is a slower town. I will say that. It's not hustle and bustle. It's say hey to your neighbor, and you know the drive to work isn't usually long, and there's no traffic except for the 5 o'clock rush hour, and it's a good town to live in, no doubt about it. People can be content with this town. People who are not aware of Fresno State's issues can be content with the town. Like I said, it's hardworking people that live here that never fail to amaze with their resourcefulness, making the most of what they have, making the most of what's available. Shoot, people entertain themselves here. I mentioned the lack of entertainment options. People still manage to stick around here. It's comfortable here. We get a bad rap for whatever reason from the San Franciscans and Los Angeles, who have much worse problems than we do, I would imagine, in terms of crime and whatnot, overpopulation. We never fail to surprise our doubters, especially on the football field. Sometimes it feels like we never fail to do something else. Seems like we never fail to disappoint. We never fail to disappoint when you're counting on the people to pull through for something big. We're a town that's content, and that's why we don't strive for something more like a Measure E. Every time you want Fresno to take its next step towards something bigger, to imagining a world where Fresno State is at the level of UC Berkeley or UCLA or one of the bigger schools, UC Davis, you know. We wonder why people want to leave to those bigger schools and not want to stay in Fresno, because Fresno State doesn't look like those bigger schools. But we can make it look like it with a successful Measure E. We never fail to surprise our doubters, but we never fail to disappoint either when you're counting on the people here to make Fresno a bigger town by making its university a bigger draw. I'm hoping that I'm surprised. I'm hoping that people pull through tonight for something big. We'll come back, and that's it for Measure E. We won't talk about it anymore. Just wanted to open with that. We'll come back and talk to Kingsburg head baseball coach Jim Cranford about the Vikings, who have started once again really well, 4-2 on the season. Back to our regularly scheduled programming. You know what to expect, 3-5 Monday through Thursday. Home field advantage on 1430 ESPN Fresno.
You're listening to Home Field Advantage with Gabe Camarillo.
Home Field Advantage on a Tuesday afternoon. High school baseball in full swing. Good tournaments out there like the Coca-Cola Classic, the Central Classic, and a big one last night. For a Monday night in March, this had some consequences potentially in terms of how we view the Clovis West Golden Eagles and how we view the Kingsburg Vikings. They're like the Fresno State football team. They can beat anyone, anytime, anywhere. For a base Division IV school that just won a Division III Central Section title, last year they beat D1 schools like Clovis and Clovis West on the road. And so we were wondering going into the 2024 campaign, after losing some of their best players from last year but returning a lot, could the Vikings still go into track territory and emerge with a victory? They were victorious last night at Clovis West, 2-0. And to talk about this win and much more about the team, we are joined now by head coach Jim Cranford. Coach Cranford, how are you today?
Good, Gabe. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You have the defending D3 section champion Vikings, and like I said, some key guys returning from that ball club. Let's run through some of the biggest returners and who has brought their bat back from last year.
Well, our whole pitching staff's back from last year. Plus, we got Holden Hirschhorn back that had Tommy John the year before. So I'd have to say that's one of our strengths. We've got Houston Hirschhorn, Gavin Innes, Wyatt Boyd, Zach Jackett, Bodie Verners, Matt Ward. It just goes on and on. There's tons of kids that are back off last year's team.
Well, you started
Jensen with Hirschhorn.
Yeah, Jensen. And let's start with him because he started last night, gave you four sterling scoreless innings. Jensen, I believe he didn't start with your varsity team last year, but he definitely finished with it.
He started with us. He just came to us late last year because of basketball. Had that deep run in the playoffs. So he came out a little late, so we kind of made sure his arm was in good shape before he got his first start. And then last night was his first start of the year, so he looked good. You know, threw about 55 pitches, threw four, and had good command of the curveball. So, I mean, he did well for his first outing of the year.
Now, how does Jensen balance that? Because you see guys that do football and baseball. You have a lot of them on your team. Verners, your son Cranford last year did that. But to have it be a winter spring sport double athlete, how does Jensen manage making that quick transition from the hardwood to the diamond?
Well, this year was a really good situation because he started playing catch probably. He shut down last year right after the TCU prospect camp, and he was invited to the LSU prospect camp, but that was in the middle of basketball. So he shut down probably about October, started throwing again in December, started to lengthen it out a little bit in January. And so when they were done, he was pretty much ready to go as far as the position player. But then he started his flat ground bullpens, and he's had three bullpens up to date, and then he had that start last night. So just kind of, you know, maintaining in the off season, you know, after some time off, that's the reason why he's where he's at right now, you know. And had a real productive summer playing travel ball and stuff like that. So, you know, he just kind of balances his time, his work ethic.
Talking to Coach Jim Cranford for the Kingsburg Vikings baseball team, they're 4-2 and just coming off a win over Clovis West at Stan Bledsoe Field, 2-0. Jensen Hirschhorn started it, got four scoreless innings, and then in came Zach Tackett, your senior, who's already made five appearances out of the six Viking games. Why is he the type of pitcher that you want in the game more often than not?
He's always around the plate. Got good command of three pitches. Doesn't throw overly hard, but changes speed. Just a really smart kid. You know, one you could count on that's going to keep in the ball game, not walk people. Does a good job feeling the spot. So, you know, he just attacks his own, you know, and pitches. He can pitch on both sides of the plate. So he's just really consistent. You know what I mean? You know what you're going to get when he runs out there.
One of the first things you mentioned to me when I asked you about the returners was Holden Hirschhorn returning to the mound. And last year he had Tommy John surgery. Why is it a big deal to have Holden pitching as well as what we already know what he can do at the plate?
Holden's very experienced. He's very savvy. He's one of the kids that can pitch kids backward, doesn't throw the same speeds, pitches on both sides of the plate, can throw his curveball behind in the count. He just, you know, he's one of those veteran guys. He's a four-year varsity guy. And, you know, he's just been there. I mean, when he got hurt as a sophomore, he was our number one. And, you know, so when he stepped up, Ethan Winslow stepped up. But at that point in time, he was getting a lot of tough games. He threw against Madera South when they were good, and they had Murph Gray and those kids, you know, and stuff like that. And he battled Murph in the Fowler tournament to a 1-1 tie through nine innings. So, I mean, he knows how to pitch. You know, he's savvy, real savvy, and he's left-handed. You know, everybody in the world just has difficulty with left-handers because you just don't see him enough.
Good point. And like I said, he does at the plate. Six hits on the team, ties Bodie Verners for most through six games. And we're talking to Jim Cranford for the Kingsburg Vikings baseball team. They're 4-2, and they beat Clovis West yesterday 2-0. When I see a shutout, I think two things. First, the pitching was on point. And second, the defense did their job. How do you feel about your defenders infield and outfield-wise?
I think they're good. You know, kids know what to do with the ball when they get it. They play a couple couple plays ahead. You know, we tried to do a good job of coaching that up, throwing the ball the right base, keeping the double play in order. I think our kids legitimately just have fun playing the game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They just like being out there. This is the kind of group where practice is over at 5:15 and they're milling around till 5:45. And, you know, they like being out there. There's always a couple kids staying after, taking extra cuts or ground balls or whatever the deal is. They're just, you know, like basketball players are gym rats. Our kids are field rats. They just like being on the field and they like each other. This is a really tight group.
Now, I want to ask you about one more pitcher, and then we're going to transition to the hitting side of the Kingsburg baseball team. But Gavin Akeesian is committed to Fresno State. How huge is that to have a kid from Kingsburg stay home in the Valley to play alongside other guys you mentioned already, like Murph Gray?
I think it's awesome. You know, he can stay close to his family, and they get to go and watch him pitch. And, you know, Gavin is just improving every time he goes out on the mound with his command. You know, his velocity is getting better. He's probably, you know, just making huge strides every time he gets on the bump. He's kind of a student of the game. He watches, he observes, he learns hitters, you know, learns patterns and stuff like that. So he's got a real big upside, you know, down the road. I mean, he's young. He's just going to continue to get better and better every time he gets out there.
He's a junior, and at 6'2", 180 pounds, I know he's – just his potential's through the roof of what he can grow into. And so you have a Fresno State commit, a D1 arm in Gavin Akeesian. You have your number one arm from 2 years ago, who's already 2-0 in Holden Hirschhorn. And you have another Hirschhorn as a sophomore in Jensen, who got the win last night in a 2-0 shutout of Clovis West. Is this one of the best pitching staffs that you've had at Kingsburg High School in your 8 years here?
It's not one of the best. It's the best we've had. I mean, there's other kids you can add to the list. I mean, Houston, he hasn't pitched much for us, but a lot of teams, he might be somebody's number one, you know. And then there's Ethan Salazar, had some clutch innings last year, Zach Tackett, Eric Garcia, Kyle Garcia. We're about nine deep, but we feel we can run out of the field at any time, you know. And they all do something a little different, you know, from velocity to pitches to whatever command. But, you know, this by far is the best pitching staff we've had.
Talking to Jim Cranford of the Kingsburg Vikings, I want to ask you about Eric Garcia to start the hitting conversation. How much did he play last year? Because already this year, he's up to five RBIs to tie for the team lead.
Well, last year he was on the JV team, and this year, of the five RBIs, he got on one swing. So he got four of them on one swing.
Grand Slam?
Stanford the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, he's a good player. I mean, you walk out, and he's not the tallest kid on the planet, but when you see him on the mound, he's got pretty good velo, and he can play multiple spots, shortstop, third, second. He can play in the outfield. Unfortunately for our younger guys, they're sitting behind guys that were starters on the Valley Championship team last year. So it makes it hard to get innings for everybody. We're trying to find ways to get other guys in and out of the lineup. But like I said, there's just guys that have been here. We knew this was coming. I mean, when these kids were freshmen, we knew when they were seniors it was going to, you know, be pretty good. And so they've been in that position for a long time. So, but he's having a good year, and he's learning, he's getting better every day. He's got a good work ethic. You know, he's a great kid.
Garcia's a junior. When you have the senior class, that's so loaded. Both Hirschhorn boys, Houston and Holden. Verners, who's a returner, and he's also tied with Garcia with five RBIs, has four more hits than Garcia, too. So, you know, Verners is your everyday guy. Salazar, Tackett, Boyd, these guys are all seniors. Gavin Enns, Gehringer. So tell me about this senior class. How long have you known that they were going to come through Kingsburg and at least win one Valley Championship?
Well, three of them. Gunner, Holden, and Houston have been with us. This is our fourth year.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen the younger kids grow, you know, Gavin and all his class. And then Eric's class, their freshman year, we had a freshman team because we had about 20-some-odd kids at each level. And Eric Garcia's freshman team was put in the WIL with Hanford, LD, before it was revamped, Lamore, and they won that league. So we knew we had some talent at the lower level. So, you know, it's you know, one of those cycles that go through that you're just real excited about. And like I said, you know, the kids a work hard. And, you know, we're kind of old school here. I mean, it's, you know, you get what you work for. It's not what you're, you know, born with. You got to work. And the nice thing about having some depth is that, you know, competition breeds character. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's one of those deals. Those kids know they got to work because the guy behind him is, you know, nipping at his coattails, ready to get in the lineup. So, you know, it's not, it's a nice problem to have, but it is a problem, you know, trying to get everybody enough innings. And baseball's not like football and basketball. You can run a guy in every other play. You know, once they're in and you pull them out, they're not a starter, they're done.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be selective what you do as far as substitutions and stuff like that. So, I mean, but you've got a lot of guys that can play the game and love the game. You know, they play hard. They enjoy it.
Talking to Coach Jim Cranford of the Kingsburg High baseball team, you mentioned about one problem you face, keeping everyone happy, right, with playing time. What about keeping everyone hungry? Because they won the D3 title last year, but you got everyone back. Everyone might feel like, okay, we know when to turn it on. We know what it takes to win. How do you make sure that they stay hungry and they play the full season at full strength and at full speed?
Well, I think we've upgraded the schedule a little bit, so there's going to be some tests. But, you know, last year we snuck up on some people. And now, you know, people know that you know, we can compete. But I think the most important, we don't kind of like worry about the opponent. We worry about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you play baseball, you're not necessarily playing the other team. You're playing the game. And if you play the game correctly and you protect the baseball and you only give up 21 outs, you have a good chance to win the game, you know. And so we don't really talk about winning. We talk about the things it takes, and we practice the things it takes to be successful. And then, you know, the one thing that's bad about high school baseball is kids just don't get to play enough. You know, when you're playing a 28-game schedule, I mean, it seems like it's long, but when you get into college, 28 games might be a month and a half.
Mm.
Or if you get into pro ball, that's a month. So if we play 2 days a week, we try to inter-squad a couple days a week and to keep our kids in that game mode, you know, because you can only practice so much. Once you get the fundamentals down, it's got to happen in a game situation. So, like, tomorrow we'll have an off day and we're going to fix some things that we're struggling with, but then we're going to inter-squad. So, and we'll probably inter-squad again on Friday, you know. And so what we do during our inter-squads is the guy's struggling a little bit with the bat, we'll pull him out of the inner squad, go down, work one-on-one in the tunnel, and then the other kids are playing. And it just, you know, I mean, like I said, if you're doing good on a Tuesday and you don't play again until Friday, you got to wait 3 days to be good again. Well, our philosophy is you can be good the next day in the inner squad, you know, so you're seeing that live pitching. We just try to play as much as we can because that's what baseball is. It's you just got to play, you know. You know, what you do in practice, you got to be able to take across the white lines and get it done, you know, on game day.
Well, I got a quick follow-up on that because you said how it's a shorter season and also shorter games. You're playing 7 innings as opposed to college. You got 9 innings. So, you know, shorter games, less games. Which is more likely to be implemented in the next decade to high school baseball in California? 9-inning games or a longer season?
I think neither. I think if travel ball keeps going the way it is, you might not see high school baseball in the next
century.
You know, because now with the emphasis, the way they've changed recruiting and things like that, a lot of it's done through camps and it's done through travel ball and stuff like that. I mean, it scares me. You know, it really does. I think that high school baseball is great because really maybe your top 1% of kids go on and the rest of the kids just have positive experiences. And just all the changes, it really bothers me, you know. It's just different. But I don't think they'll ever lengthen the season because of the academic part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they'll lengthen the game either, you know, because one thing about baseball, if you allow it to be, it can be boring. If you're not hustling, flying off, the field, getting ready to go, it can be a boring game. So, I mean, kids want to play the fast-style pace basketball and things like that. So I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for, but it's one that's out there.
It's a good answer because it's real, and I love how real you are, Coach. Tonight, you're hosting Garza. Last thing I want to ask you about is the crowd at Kingsburg. If we were to go to a Kingsburg baseball game, what would we expect?
You'd see a lot of people enjoying themselves and coming out and supporting Kingsburg baseball. I mean, realistically, I think almost every time they play, our side is full.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have your regulars that come every night, and people will hear about it. It's just great, great atmosphere, you know. I mean, the people that come out and watch the games and donate their time to work the scoreboard, work the snack bar, it's just really positive. You know, it's a positive environment.
And tonight, Kingsburg hosts Garza at 6 o'clock. That's the first pitch. Is there a projected starter for tonight?
Yeah, I'll probably go in on the left-hander. Holden's probably going tonight.
All right. So if you like what you heard about Holden Hirschhorn, I think you'll like what you see tonight at 6 against the Garza Guardians. We previewed a little bit, but also recapped the first six games for the Kingsburg Vikings baseball season. 4-2, and they're the defending D3 champion with a lot coming back from that D3 title team, which we talked about with head coach Jim Cranford. Coach Cranford, always fun to have you on the show. Look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. Wait, one more name that's having a great year so far is Bodie Berners.
Yes, sir.
Real consistent for us. Real consistent. Well, Gabe, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for getting a hold of us, and good luck to you. And if I can ever do anything for you, let me know.
Thank you, Coach Cranford. Yeah, I love Berners. Like, following the guys, whether it's through Max Preps or through Twitter, or, you know, the occasional highlight video that I'll see, it's Houston Holden, Berners, it's Jensen, it's Akeesian. You got two Gavins, Akeesian and Enns. And it's like, this Kingsburg team, they're becoming household names in the Valley. If you're a smart baseball fan, you know about the Vikings and the Stars. And it's also helpful that I think Kingsburg travels to Clovis. You have Clovis West, you have Clovis, you have these different teams that are hosting Kingsburg. Heck, they're going to go to Bakersfield later this month to face the defending D1 champion, Centennial Golden Hawks. And let me tell you this, I think that the defending D3 title champs are going to beat the defending D1 title champs, which tells you everything you need to know about baseball in the Valley and the parity. And let's talk more about baseball in the Valley. Some of the hottest teams right now we'll discuss when Home Field Advantage continues live on 1430 ESPN Fresno.
You're listening to Home Field Advantage with Gabe Camarillo.
So one quick correction, because we hold ourselves accountable here on Home Field Advantage. The Kingsburg game against Centennial, which I hyped up at the end there, not going to be in Bakersfield, but going to be in, that's right, Tulare. That's going to be part of the Visalia Tulare Invitational. That's the same weekend, I think, as the Easter Classic or somewhere near. I remember last year was the same week, and I was kind of bummed because I was thinking, dang it, like, I don't want to go to both of these tournaments. So many good high school baseball tournaments. That's the great thing about the Valley. Like we talked about with Kingsburg coach Jim Cranford just moments ago, you could tell a lot from the early season games. Like when Kingsburg beat Clovis West yesterday, 2-0. And I said that score like a bunch of times. I don't want to trigger Golden Eagle fans. It's just a sign of how good Kingsburg pitching staff is. And we learned Kingsburg can hang with the Division I big boys. A lot of teams kind of opening our eyes in tournament season. That's the theme of our hottest teams in the Valley. But before we talk about the hottest teams in the Valley, let's give you the scores from around the section. Yesterday, El Diamante picked up their second win of the season, taking down Fresno Christian 13-1. Here is the new wrinkle about the LD Miners. Last year, the Miners were an outstanding pitching and defense squad. They had senior leadership on the mound. They were senior heavy overall. That's why they went to Lloyd Merriman Field and upset the Clovis Cougars in the 12-5 matchup of the D1 bracket. Heck, they could have won the whole D2 title if the brackets made any sense. But this year, it's flipped. El Diamante is showing a trend towards offense. They scored 6 runs last week against a strong Clovis West pitching staff. And yesterday, they scored 13 on Fresno Christian. Their leader, their standout senior, one of the favorites to win EYL Player of the Year, Caleb Silva, crossed home plate 3 times. They got 3 RBIs from Jordan Reiner, who's a sophomore. Reiner also managed to pitch 5 innings, giving up no earned runs, striking out 6 for El Diamante yesterday. So El Diamante in the Coca-Cola Classic defeats Fresno Christian 13-1. The other score of note yesterday was Kingsburg 2, Clovis West 0. Today, so many good matchups. So right now, between Clovis East and Tulare Western, after 3 innings, there is no score. And we got an update right now. In the middle of the fourth, there's no score still. Clovis East had a runner on second. Can't bring him in. Interesting about the Timberwolves. They managed to win a 1-0 game last week against Liberty in the Central Classic. Aiden Corkery, 13 strikeout, one hit shutout of who I had at number one prior to that game. Now it might change. If you want to listen to my rankings and Austin Kemp's as well, listen to Thursday's show. But Clovis East offense seems to be hard for them to come by. You kind of had that feeling with a lot of graduations over the offseason that that could be the case. But they still bring back guys like Gaeta and Miller and Rocco Gonzalez, who's pitching really well on the mound today. Those guys are run producers. I think it's just a matter of time before the Timberwolves bats wake up. So that's actually here in Fresno, Clovis East hosting Tulare Western. You also have Kerman versus Mission Oak. And a lot of games in Bakersfield. Bullard at Liberty is one of them. Clovis North at Centennial is another. Buchanan at Stockdale is a third. So if you're in Bakersfield, you got two track teams and Bullard, led by Tom Donald and all those future D1 guys coming to your town. It's a good day to be a Kern County baseball fan. You have to choose between Bullard at Liberty, Buchanan at Stockdale, and Clovis North at Centennial. Other games of note, Hoover is traveling to Emmanuel, currently playing as we speak. Coca-Cola Classic and the Central Classic are kind of converging on the same week, so that leads to extra good matchups. Tonight, I mentioned Garza at Kingsburg. You got Frontier at Redwood. 5:30 is the first pitch time. Fresno Christian traveling to Clovis West tonight. And this is a interesting week, like I said, because we kind of get to know who's good, who's hot, who's not. You can just tell by the Central Classic standings. Stockdale leads the way at 4-0. Bakersfield Christian is 3-0. They have to make up again with Mission Oak, but I feel like Bakersfield Christian's still going to win that game. So you could have a rematch of last year's Central Classic Championship between Stockdale and BCHS. The next two teams, Liberty 3-1, Redwood 3-1. So in a tournament that has all these track schools and Bullard, the top four are South Valley teams. And then Clovis East is 3-1. They should actually have the tiebreaker over Liberty since they beat Liberty head-to-head. Clovis East, like I said, middle of the fourth inning, tie with Tulare Western, who checks in at 1-3. That one win came against Centennial. Centennial beat Bullard. Bullard beat Tulare Western, who beat Centennial. It's like, you know, any other three-way scenario you've seen in high school sports. It's very even, I'm trying to say. A lot of three-way ties in these standings. A lot of this team beat that team, but then that team beat this other team, which beat this team. It's a very hard thing to figure out. Easiest way to figure out who's the best right now in the Valley is who's playing the best right now. Who's the hot team in mid-March? Obviously, doesn't mean as much as who's the hot team in mid-May, but it's how you start that kind of determines the confidence of your ball club. It kind of determines, okay, we like how we're playing now. Let's keep it up. It's fun when you're winning. It's fun to be in Kingsburg. It's fun to be in Bakersfield, one of these teams that I'm about to mention. The top four hottest high school teams in the Valley. Kingsburg is the hottest team right now. Three-game winning streak, but the way they've won these games, playing their brand, good defense, good pitching, and timely hitting. Catcher Bodie Verners, breakout candidate for a good year this year. And that fierce three-headed pitching monster, Akeesian, Fresno State bound. Jensen Hirschhorn, Holden Hirschhorn, holding it down. He's going to pitch tonight for Garza. I'm predicting a 6-inning, 1-run allowed performance. If that, might be a shutout. This Kingsburg team's legit. A lot of college talent. I didn't even mention, and I feel bad for it. Houston's going to UC Davis. Houston Hirschhorn. So it's going to be a good season for Kingsburg. And this is a team that's hot right now. They're going to stay hot through league play. Now, there's one team that can stop them from winning a league title, and it's those pesky Kerman Lions who have scheduled themselves a really difficult slate, but they don't want it any other way. The Kerman Lions have graduated to, like, I would describe them as, what's a good college baseball equivalent to the Kerman Lions? How about the Fresno State Bulldogs? A lower conference team that schedules up and faces the Washington States, faces the UC Irvine's, the ranked teams of the world. That's what the Kerman Lions are doing. Kerman stands in Kingsburg's way of winning a league title. And you want to watch those three Tri-County games when they come up in April. Stockdale, the second hottest high school baseball team. Five straight wins, three of them shutouts, two of them coming from Bowen Salyards, who hasn't allowed a run in his first 19 innings of work. It's not just Salyards that's been a huge reason for this. You do need to score runs, and it's been the St. Mary's commit Braden Gutierrez who's hit the big hits, three doubles and a long ball. Hayden Etchlep's done both, 353 batting average, 12 strikeouts so far this year. Stockdale, a team that lost Featherston, Ruben Rodriguez, Matt Torres, Lee, like those are four guys right there. Three of them Division I commits, but four key starters that you lost. And we used to think, oh, you lose too much experience. Now you're going to start losing the next year. Not if you're Stockdale. You can lose your top four players. You can lose your head coach, and you can still keep winning. And they face a team that's lost just as much but is not having as good of a start in the Buchanan Bears. If Buchanan beats Stockdale, I think that could be the first huge win of the Troy Glaz era. That game currently going on in Bakersfield as we speak. The third hottest team right now in the Valley is Frontier. Three straight wins where they've scored 10 runs in each of them. That includes a 10-1 rout of Buchanan and a 10-0 shutout of Central. And that's not just a shutout, by the way. It was a six-inning perfect game thrown by Brady Durkin. Frontier, right next to Stockdale in terms of heat. Liberty would join this group as well if they didn't lose to Clovis East last week. But Frontier, Stockdale, Liberty forms the top of, honestly, am I going to get crucified for saying this in the 559? Can I say it's the best league in the Valley, the River League, between Frontier and Stockdale and Liberty? And Centennial's also playing well, too. I know they're 3-3. They just lost to a great game by Moose Cuellar and Tulare Western, but they also beat Bullard. So, and they're also your defending D1 champs. So you got four really good teams in the River League. As opposed to the track, Buchanan's down this year. Clovis West, I like to see them finish out this non-league schedule. It's a bit easier, I think, so they can handle it. But they lost to Kingsburg last night. Clovis High went through that crazy tournament in Vegas where they had to win a game 24-20. We can make a whole segment about that game, what the heck happened there. But Clovis is a good ball club. Still needs to be determined, though, if they are one of the top teams in the section, because they haven't played anyone big in this section besides Bullard, who they beat 9-6. The big team in the track right now, outside of Clovis East, is Clovis North. That's the fourth hottest team in the Valley right now. They beat Kerman at Kerman, which is a big deal now. I mean, Kerman is one of the top teams in the section. I actually put him in my top 10 last Thursday, and they beat them 3-1. Wyatt Prieto dealing on the mound like he usually does. Six innings, four strikeouts. Jaden Hurdle comes in for the save. Between Prieto and Hurdle, and there's this other pitcher, Davis Wilson, who had himself a good outing against Tulare Western last week. They have pitching. They have hitting. I mean, Hurdle gets on base in multiple different ways. Singles, walks, you name it. Jack West, he's matured. He's a physical presence in the batter's box. I like Clovis North. They've grown up, and I think they and Clovis are the teams to beat right now. Clovis West right after them. Clovis East right after them. Buchanan, I need to see more from the Bears. Crazy that the defending track champs I have all the way down there. But a lot of season still to be played. But those are the hottest teams right now in the Valley. Still to come on Home Field Advantage on 1430 ESPN Fresno. We're going to give our all Central Section basketball teams with myself and Paul Hernandez of Nothing But Net Magazine. You know Paul. He's made weekly visits on the show. He'll make his final visit ever on the show because this is the final week ever of the show. And it's going to be fun. We'll give our Comeback Player of the Year award, our Coach of the Year award, all those good things. But right next, after the break, it's going to be David Tangipa, former Fresno State football player who's running for a state assembly seat. First of all, why is he doing it? And what about his Fresno State football career led to this? We'll talk about that with David next. But first, the SportsCenter update. Here it is. Yep, you heard that right. You got another hour of Home Field Advantage on 1430 ESPN Fresno. Yes, Clovis West at Archbishop Mitty tonight. Can they win the Open Division NorCal final? We're all hoping they can. They can bring it back home. They're going to have to beat the number one team in the country to do so. You know, high school sports is the focus here on Home Field Advantage. We just spent literally a half hour talking high school baseball, giving you the hottest teams right now in the Valley. And it's so cool. You can just drive minutes away to your local baseball field. There's probably some future college players hitting in the batter's box, pitching on the mound. We're going to talk some state high school basketball playoffs later this hour with Paul Hernandez of Nothing But Net Magazine. We have three local teams vying for a spot in the state championship game. But like I said, it's high school heavy. It's local heavy. Monday through Thursday, 3 to 5, you have Home Field Advantage. And when you have a local story like this, a former Fresno State football player running for office, it just catches the eye. It makes you ask questions like, well, why is he running for office? And what about playing football made him want to do this? Well, we can answer those questions about Mr. David Tangipa, who is running for Assembly District 8. Obviously, today is Election Day, so it just kind of fits, right? Talk to a guy who played for Fresno State football on a day where now he's trying to win a different type of game. David, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Gabe, and thank you for having me on.
Well, David, let's just start right away with asking, why are you running for office? Because that's the big question everyone wants to know.
Well, I think most people see this, and everyday Californians, regardless of party, they see it as we're the fifth largest economy in the world, and they're asking themselves this question. And yet we have rolling blackouts. We're the agricultural capital of the world in the region where we make all of the food for the rest of the nation, and yet we can't afford groceries. And I just look at the state of affairs that California is in today. Not only that, looking at Fresno State and the dilapidation of the buildings that have happened there, California is mismanaged at the highest level. And I just want to go in and be a new voice to just get us back on track so that we can focus on doing the basics right. We shouldn't have rolling blackouts in the largest economy in the United States. We shouldn't have highest food costs in the agricultural capital of the world right here in the Central Valley. I was in Iowa about 2 months ago speaking to individuals and leaders across the nation. Their food was cheaper, and they can keep the lights on in the blizzard. And yet we can't do that here in California. I just want to be a new voice and bring a bulldog perspective to Sacramento, because I think we just need some good people who just want to take care of this area that took care of me.
Well, it makes sense that you're a political science major at Fresno State, because now you went right into politics. You're also born in Sacramento, so I feel like growing up in the shadow of the Capitol, it kind of just felt like, even though you started as a football player, were you always going to be a football player? Or, I mean, did you ever have aspirations for something more?
Well, I would tell you this. So I grew up in a very poor community. I grew up in low-income housing. My mother's an immigrant from the island of Tonga. I'm Polynesian. Mm-hmm. My father's a disabled veteran. And my area was devastated due to some policy that was created back in the 90s. And my dad's an old war vet guy and goes, well, that's what happens when you're not one of the people who's making decisions in your life. And I saw football as my access. I tell people I got out the hoodway. I had the chance to go and play football at Fresno State.
You really say that? You say you got out the hoodway?
I say I got out the hoodway, you know, because from the community that I'm from, you're either rapping, trapping, or you're doing some other things, or you're playing athletics. And there used to be a code around that individuals would protect you if you were good at school and you're good at sports. And I had that same neighborhood and community feel, especially being Polynesian. They did not allow us into different areas. But football was my access to higher education. When I got to Fresno State, look, I played with Natane Muti, Juju Hughes, Mike Bell, Marcus McMarion, and all these other individuals. Those were NFL guys. I was going to go be an education guy. And so I focused on education. I got my degree in political science, criminology, a legal studies certificate. I got my master's in business and also started working in real estate with Warren Fortier, another former Bulldog, because he was looking for somebody determined and hungry. And I'm very grateful for all of those opportunities because it was my access to pull my family out of generational poverty. And so not only is it just being political, I just think it's about being a true public servant for this community that took care of me.
Talking to David Tangipa, who is running for office and former Fresno State football player, I love to hear some of the stories, if you have them, playing with Juju, playing with Marcus. I see Marcus stroll in here every now and then because he is heading up the Bulldog Bread Collective. But any fun stories during your five-year career there?
Yep. There's a whole lot of fun stories, I can tell you that. But one of the things that I love and actually missed and really appreciated about our team I mean, I was in this period. I'm the year after Derek Carr, and then we had that little period where in 2016 we were 1-11. We were the worst team, one of the worst teams in the nation. And then the next year, Coach Tedford comes in, and we have the NCAA historic comeback, and we win 10. We go 10-4 and beat Houston in the bowl game, and then 12-2, and we did that with pretty much 90% of the same guys that were there in that one.
Wait, yeah. So can you explain that to me? Because I've always found that fascinating. I know that stat, and it's like, why were they losing so much the year before, and then they started winning? Like, did Tedford really create that much of a change? And what did Tedford even do to do that?
So we were beaten down and everything else. And so what happens when you go 1-16? At least you know with all the guys who leave, you know who's 100% a Bulldog. And so with Coach Tedford coming in, I mean, he even in his first speech, I love it. You could feel the temperature in the room change when he gave us and he delivered the speech back in January when we got back from winter break. He comes in and says, when I got to Cal, I needed to learn to be a Bear. But I'm here back home and I'm a Bulldog. I was one of the ones who created what it meant to be a Bulldog and was part of that foundation. So Coach Tedford walked in and immediately demanded a raising of the standard. Well, he raised the standard, and we had to live up to those standards. And so working into that, you see the quick transition. Go 10-4, and Marcus McMahon is playing. I'll tell you this, our 2017 team, even though the 2018 team was amazing, and we are actually the highest ranked to finish for Fresno State in football history. But that 2017 team, if we didn't play Alabama, the number one team in the country, and Washington, the number four team in the country, that team was a better team, especially our D-line with Malik Forrester, Rob Stanley, Tobenna Okeke, and Nate Madsen. We were a really, really good team in that 2017 year. I wish some of those guys were still there. We should have also had the championship in Fresno State in Bulldog history because we beat Boise in that last game. And yet, still because of that computer algorithm, we had to go play Boise in Boise. We should be a two-time Mountain West championship, and yes, am I salty about it? Yes.
Well, hey, how about this, David? So the notes read here, you caught a touchdown in 2017, and you caught a touchdown in 2018. Now, that 2017 team was better, you say, but was the 2018 touchdown better, or do they feel the same to you?
Well, in the 2017 one, I was in Hawaii, and I got to catch a touchdown in front of a lot of my family. I've got a Polynesian last name. You would think that the Hawaiian announcers would have gotten it right, but they didn't. So,
how do they say it? Because you're David Tangipa, but they said.
Yeah, they said Tangipa, and I was like, wow. You know, they're Polynesian, and it's Tangipa.
Tangipa. Oh, my God. So, I was saying it wrong the whole time.
It's all right. But Paul Leffler never gets it wrong. So I'll tell you that. Paul's a great guy. But not only – there's multiple stories out there. The 2018 touchdown, I can tell you this, that one is still out there because I did a little celebration dance. Coach Tedford did not like that. But, look, you celebrate all wins, and so you got to enjoy when you put in the work, and that's something that I've taken to heart too.
Can you describe the touchdown celebration, if it's PG for our radio?
It is PG. It's just a little touchdown dance that was, Jared Rice is one of my close friends along with Kyle Rittering, and well, we're all tight ends, and if people can see, some of the tight end leadership out there, we're all cut from the same cloth. So we like to have fun. Travis Kelce likes to have fun. George Kittle likes to have fun. You have all of these other tight ends.
I mean, Gronk.
Look at Greg Olsen commercials. Yeah. We're all the same.
My favorite's Gronk, just with his celebrations and his acerbic attitude. But we're talking to another tight end from here, Fresno State, David Tangipa, who is running for office. He's now going to go into the world of politics after playing football, and a lot of those touchdowns, a lot of those plays that he made were right here on ESPN Radio when we had the Bulldog football rights. I want to ask you one quick thing about your story, because really we're just focusing on the football career of you. You walked on, but did you eventually earn the scholarship at Fresno State?
I did. So I walked on Fresno State. I was a walk-on from 2014 to 2016. That was a very hard period, but I wasn't going to give up. And so it took a little bit to get there. We did. It changed my life. Not only did it change my life, it changed my family's life, pulled them out of that poverty. And it's a big reason why, because there was actually a period there where I ended up homeless, and multiple members from this community wrapped their arms around me, fed me, gave me a place to live, allowed me to sleep on their couch, do all of these different things. And so what that meant to me is that it is now my turn to serve them in Sacramento, because a lot of it doesn't make sense. We see all these businesses that are going under. We see how hard it is to live. I just want to serve this community because it took care of me. And now I want to go take care of it. And look, I was a tight end that played more fullback. If I need to run into things hard and start hitting some things, it's time that we get back to that. And so we can knock this play straight again.
You know what's funny is your job at Fresno State, the plays you made often went unnoticed, but I feel like now you're going into the public sphere where everything gets noticed. Why would you want that?
I think it's necessary. I think, again, it's necessary to we cannot go down this path further. I think about how expensive it is for my family to just buy groceries, to try to keep the lights on. I mean, PG&E bills, there's multiple people across the area with the recent rate hike on PG&E. I mean, people can't even afford whether they can have basic internet services or different things, or they're sitting in the dark, and we have rolling blackouts. It is necessary to be somebody in the arena, and I'm willing to take that burden on, because I can tell you this, my life's going to be in the public spotlight. Nothing's going to be harder than being homeless and hungry and eating Muscle Milk. And the Shahadi family, I just want to make sure that they're always getting thank-you'd, because they had milk that they would donate to Fresno State, and for 2 weeks, I didn't have a single piece of solid food, and I only ate or drank the Muscle Milk that the Shahadi family paid out here, and they own Producer's Dairy. And it's just getting hard for everybody. So I understand that position, but I also understand the position of being a business owner. And I'm willing on to take all ridicule, anything else like that, and I can carry it, because nothing's harder than growing up like that.
All right. Thank you, David, for joining us today, and good luck to you and your endeavors.
Hey, I appreciate it, and make sure you get those ballots in before 7:30 today. If anybody has lost their ballots, they can go to a vote center.
All right, David, he is the former Fresno State football tight end, and I would add this as well, like I explained to him earlier, or like I asked earlier, crazy how you go from like a guy who is, and I guess it kind of makes sense, right? The tight end is helping the quarterback, whether it's blocking or occasionally catching a pass. The fullback helps the running back pave holes. So, I mean, I feel like David's always been kind of a helper throughout his football career, and we talked a lot about his football career, definitely, and now tonight, obviously, the big state assembly race. Well, coming up after the break, more Fresno State football conversation. Now, the future of the Bulldogs this season still looks promising. Spring Bowl hasn't even played yet, but I want to go into the receiver room and why I think these receivers could get the job done, even though they lost two primary slot guys that were big last year. We'll go over what they lost, but what they have coming back, and maybe what they got in the portal when Home Field Advantage continues. Gabe Camarillo with you for the next 35 minutes on 1430 ESPN Fresno. So Fresno State football gets started how many days? Well, I'll give you the months. Kickoff is 5 months away, August 31st, against Michigan. What can we expect from the Fresno State football team? I think a lot of that can be answered by what the offense does. What can you expect from this offense that brings back Mikey Keene, that brings back Malik Sherrod, who is honestly one of the most underrated keeps of this offseason. In an era where everyone loses their running back, Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt left New Mexico to go to Arizona. Kwalee Conley left San Jose State to go to Arizona. A lot of people leave to go to Arizona now with Brett Brennan going there. It just feels like getting Malik Sherrod back is a huge deal. And now the receiver room. Keeping Jalen Moss is huge because Jalen Moss is good. We saw him kind of take steps that Jalen Cropper took in 2020. Think about this. All right. Cropper, the other Jalen, who's obviously had himself quite the career at Fresno State, hoping that he has a good career in the NFL one day. Still some time for him. But Cropper, 2019, got started early, hit the ground running. First touch on 2019 went to him. And he continued on with some highlights, but 2020 was when he blossomed. I think Moss had himself a hybrid of 19 and 20. He had some of the big boom games that Cropper had in 2020. But Jalen Moss, I think he needs to be the number one guy undisputed this year. A guy who you look at and say, all right, no one's going to guard him. He is our leader. He's going to be getting 1,000 yards receiving. Is that too much expectations? Last year, he had 706 yards on 55 catches. He had two 100-yard receiving games. The first true or redshirt freshman to have multiple in a freshman season since Devontae Adams. And I'm thinking about the Kent State game where he had 120. I'm thinking about the Wyoming game when he had 115. The speed he displayed in the Wyoming game. I think Jalen Moss is due for a breakout year. 706, if he hits 1,000, that's kind of the leap I'm expecting him to take. I'm expecting him to take a 2020 to 21 leap that Cropper took. And forgive me if I'm comparing too much, but I compare Mikey to Jake Haener like I compare Jalen Moss to Jalen Cropper, because I think Moss has to be at Cropper's level for Fresno State to win a championship, like Mikey has to be on Jake's level to win a Mountain West championship. So I think Moss is my pick to break out this year. Josiah Freeman's another trendy option who got better as the year got longer. And with Josiah, his numbers don't look that good. Like 19 catches, that's less than 20. 249, that's less than 250. It's because he didn't get in the game that much, like I said. But when it got deeper into the year, when he was allowed to be on the field more, and this kind of came with Delaney's head injury, you saw the potential. His acrobatic catches at Utah State. He had 75 yards. That was his most in a game all season. But his touchdown catch against New Mexico State, when he was given chances, he made the most of them, I thought. He had 5 catches against Boise State. He needs to be given the ball more, I would imagine, for him to really hit his potential. Now, Josiah Freeman at 6'3", he is probably your best red zone option with Trey Watson hitting the portal. Can Josiah Freeman make not as big of a leap as Jalen Moss, but be like what Jalen Moss was this past season? Be giving you 500 to 700 receiving yards. I think that could go a long way to how the receiver room looks by the end of the year. You want this receiver room to be the best in the conference. That's what Fresno State is known for, having electric receivers. Other teams in the conference wish they had Fresno's receivers. Mac Delaney is another guy who comes back. Kind of makes sense as your slot or outside guy. He was more outside last year. But I loved his story. In fact, I wrote his story for Barkboard. A guy who waited his turns, played special teams, finally starts every game, all 13, puts up 500 receiving yards, 3 touchdowns. I think the expectation is a little bit more this year, right? Can he get a 100-yard game? Can he consistently be there on third downs like an Eric Brooks was? Can it be third in Delaney? I think at his size, 5'11", 174, he's kind of like that tweener, you know? Can he be your slot receiver? Can he be someone that in short yardage situations you go to so that way you open up the deeper opportunities for a Moss or for a Freeman? I know Delaney has the speed to burn a corner and to go deep, but I think what Delaney could find himself in is filling the role of a Brooks or Gill. Now, there's also other slot receivers on this team. Guys like maybe a Tim Greer come to mind. I know Greer's a bit taller than your typical slot receiver, but I'm just thinking off the top of my head. Maybe a guy like Kenry McCune. I talked to Kerem earlier this year. Actually, might have been late last year on National Signing Day. I think it was on National Signing Day we talked to Kerem, who was coming from Monterey Peninsula College. And what I liked about that conversation was his energy and his eagerness. Dude's from Saginaw, Michigan. He came to Monterey Peninsula and put up some good numbers. And I feel like of all the JUCO guys, of all the new guys, it's him and this true freshman, Jordan Malaulu, from Long Beach Poly, that I have the most confidence in. I also like Marshall Sanders, but the advantage that Malaulu has over Sanders is Malaulu is already on campus, and I feel like he's going to take advantage of spring ball and earn himself some playing time this fall. So I like the receiver room. They got better with some of the freshmen coming in. They lose Gill and Brooks, and that's the biggest question. Who comes in the slot and fills that role? My pick is Delaney. I think if he moves into the slot, you got a great three-headed monster between Moss, Freeman, and Delaney, all with experience from 2023. And how about him? One more guy I didn't mention, and I should have. But how about him? A sixth-year senior from Tulare, California, Amorie Edwards. I want to see Amorie break out, as does everyone who's a Fresno State fan. Because Amorie, he's earned it, man. So many trials and tribulations, sitting out for COVID and then getting injured twice. It's Amorie's time to shine, definitely. And we saw in 2019 what he's capable of doing. I'd never forget that New Mexico State game, ever. All right, we'll come back and finish the show, talking some high school basketball, making our picks for all section teams when Home Field Advantage continues with Paul Hernandez on 1430 ESPN Fresno.
You're listening to Home Field Advantage with Gabe Camarillo.
4:36 on your Tuesday afternoon drive. I know we keep looking ahead of things. Will Measure E pass? Will the Fresno State wide receivers find their groove? Will they improve? Because you want them to. They need to for Fresno State to win this season against Michigan or against anyone on their schedule. We keep looking ahead to things. But how about we look back at the high school basketball season that was? I mean, we're looking ahead to high school baseball, but we haven't even awarded who are the best in high school basketball. Probably because the state hasn't done that yet. There's still two games to be played at the state postseason level. Tonight, in high school state playoffs, Division II SoCal Championship, Centennial at Heritage Christian. To think that we were this close from having Centennial versus Bakersfield Christian, that would have been an amazing event for the 6-6-1 hoop scene. But nonetheless, still great for the Golden Hawks to be one win away from Sacramento in D2. In D3, Bullard is on the road at Santa Cruz for the NorCal Championship. And in D5, SoCal title between the North Bakersfield Stars and Verdugo Hills, who hosts and who narrowly beat Corcoran by one last Thursday. Otherwise, we could have seen a Corcoran versus North game. Who knows? It could have gone that way. But this is a great time of year. High school state playoffs in full swing. Carruthers Girls on the road tonight at, I believe it's University, and Clovis West, we know, in the open division at Archbishop Mitty. To talk about high school basketball a bit with me, it's Paul Hernandez of Nothing But Net Magazine making another weekly visit with us. Paul, how you doing?
Yeah, we're doing good, man. First off, man, I just want to say congratulations on everything going for you, man, with regards to some new adventures coming up for you, man. Much deserved. You grind so hard in this thing, man. It's again, just wanted to just give you a little shout out, man. I'm really proud of you for this, and it's going to be a great opportunity. It's going to miss this kind of stuff, but you know, new opportunities, man. You definitely earned it and put the work in. So, congrats on that.
Thank you so much for extending those congrats. About high school basketball tonight, of the three teams, which do you think has the best chance? So I'm talking about Centennial boys, Bullard boys, and North boys. Which has the best chance of going to Sacramento?
I really would say North. Mm-hmm. Like you said, they're going against a team that barely got a win over Corcoran by one. I had talked to somebody, I think even the coaching staff, I think I had texted them a while back, and it was just kind of reminiscent of 2019, like the Foothill team. Mm-hmm. It was Division Five, where things kind of lined up for them. I think that I want to say that team was in Division Three as well for the section, and they ended up in Division Five for the state, and things just kind of aligned for them. And I really do. I think North has the best chance. Centennial is going to. I think Centennial, the biggest problem matchup wise for them will be Heritage Christian's just got they're deep, and they got hoopers. You know, Dylan Shaw, Tay Simmons are big. I think physically they'll be able to handle the physicality that Heritage Christian has, but just if Rippin Gill gets in any foul trouble, I just don't know where they're going to manufacture points. And I know we've mentioned that multiple times on the show this year, but you know, kudos to them getting this far, man. They've shown to be, like we've talked about this year, a really solid team that plays great defense. They've got bigs, they've got size, they're senior, junior heavy, and it's proven to do well for them in this playoff run.
Paul, you watched Centennial face King Drew, right?
I did. I wasn't at the game live. I was watching a bunch of them in FHS.
Well, you saw that game, and I have to know, how did Centennial pull this one out? How have they pulled these last three out? I know that, obviously, they were given a nice draw, but they were the 7th seed, so they had to go on the road at one point. What did you think about this recent three-game stretch from the Golden Hawks?
Again, it's just their consistency. You know what I mean? They got up big. They're up by almost 20. I think they were up 20 on King Drew. And King Drew's got some really talented players. So they battled back. made it a good game. And I think some of this kind of speaks to a little bit of the seeding issues that I know a lot of people have mentioned with regards to the, you know, the seeding at the state level when some of that comes out. But at the end of the day, you got to beat who's in front of you. And, you know, we've talked about this throughout this year, although they didn't have the most battle-tested schedule outside of, like, the Sierra Canyon game prior to kind of getting into the postseason. They just had a team that was built to be able to go out and be relatively stable, durable, and they're not going to throw anything super fancy at you. They shoot the three ball pretty well, but they're just their consistency, their veteran play, and their size and athleticism, I think, has allowed them to continue to keep pushing. I think it'll allow them to stay in the game tonight. I just don't know if they have enough firepower. You know, you've got guys on. This is not even supposed to be Heritage Christian's year, by the way. They were looking at this as kind of a rebuild year. They don't really have any seniors, so they're bringing a bunch of juniors, sophomores, and freshmen back next year on a really good incoming freshman class. So, you know, they're a really deep, talented, and also a really good program overall. They're a state power pretty much every year. So I just think, especially if Rippon gets in any kind of foul trouble, it'll be hard for them to manufacture points. But, you know, they've been able to stay consistent and prove durable this year. And so, I mean, I think it'll be a good game. I don't think it'll be a blowout. I just think at the end of the day, winning on at that gym, it's a small gym. You know what I mean? They're going to pack that thing full, very, you know, pro Heritage Christian crowd. It's going to be a tough one for them for sure.
But because Centennial has those seniors, I'm leaning towards them winning a very close game. I think it's going to be North beating Verdugo Hills. I mean, North, to be honest, right, they won Division III in the section. They're in D5. I think we knew from the beginning they would have a very easy time, relatively speaking, in that bracket. And then Bullard, tough task for them at Santa Cruz. I got Bullard losing that one because Santa Cruz is very athletic and strong defensively. Didn't want to spend too much time on that game because I wanted to transition over to the meat and potatoes of our conversation, the thing that everyone probably saw on social media and they want to tune in to hear who our all-section teams are. I'll let you go first. I told you the criteria. I'll tell everyone now. It's not position-based. It's positionless. Top five players are first-team all-section. Next five, second team. Players 11 through 15 are third team. So let's start first-team all-section, Paul, and we'll go from there.
So I did mine just a little bit different, only because this is the format I use for my all section teams. I had MVP first, and then I have my all teams. And so for MVP, I went Co this year. I went Tunde and Connor Amundson. I just think what Connor brought to the table and what they were able to accomplish this year, maybe the numbers aren't as gaudy as Tunde's. But to me right now, thinking of this conversation, I have those two as co-MVP. And then for my first team, I have Julius Price, Rippon Gill, DJ Stickman from Clovis West, Bentley Waller from Bakersfield Christian, and Julius Oliver-Landry from San Joaquin Memorial. That's my top five for my first team.
I like it. Now, we kind of differ in some areas. I have Julius Price in my first team all section, and I have Stickman as well, but I also have Rippon Gill just because I feel like take away Rippon from Centennial, and what are the Golden Hawks? Are they league champions? Yeah. Are they still playing in the state playoffs? You know, I feel like the value of Rippon is huge. He's first team. And I know you could say the same thing about Julius, take him away from a Memorial, but they also have Sajin Sidhu, who is a candidate for most improved player, in my opinion. You also have Parker Spees. Like, there's a lot of talent on Memorial that, unfortunately, I think you have to dock Julius for that. But Julius is so talented, though. And I said all year long he's a top five player in the section. I don't disagree with your list at all. Run through it again one more time.
So, again, the first team would be Julius Price, Rippon Gill, DJ Stickman, Bentley Waller, and Julius Oliver-Landry. And like I said, I had Connor and Tunde as the co-MVP.
Yep. I like that. Now, so you had Price in there. We kind of agree on that. I have Connor, Price, Gill, Stickman, Tunde as my top five. I'll tell you my second team. I went with Felder, Bentley Waller, Jackson Young, Dinuba's Javier Torres, who I enjoyed watching him on the D2 final. Very, very strong for a point guard. He kind of gives me like Magic Johnson vibes. Not 6'9 tall, but 6'3 tall, which is tall for Dinuba, to be honest. And he kind of just controls the whole show. Jordan Espinoza wraps up my second team.
Okay, for my second team, some similarities as well. I've got Jordan Espinoza, Dalen Felder, Logan Kilbert, Gabe Gutierrez, and then I put the big man from Corcoran on there, and Javon Bragg.
I like it. I like it. Now, Bentley Waller, he shares
the numbers. I mean, go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead, Paul.
Oh, I just the numbers that Bragg put up this year, and he was in foul trouble in the section championship game, and so that kind of took him out of it a little bit, you know. And their other big guy kind of went to work, but you look at the consistent numbers. Obviously, not the greatest competition, but as a junior, he's got a lot of size and could have a pretty productive club season too. I think he's playing with Mike Potts, Fresno Wildcats, so. I liked him in that group as, you know, not having a traditional center, but as one of kind of the bigs I thought that stood out this year. We talked about the not really dominant bigs, but thought he kind of stood out numbers-wise. And he had a really good second half when he was able to play in that section championship game. So that's who I had in my five. Gabe Gutierrez, Jordan Espinoza, Dalen Felder, Logan Kilbert, and Javon Bragg.
Waller gets both of our love. He gets your first team love. He gets my second team love. I thought Bentley Waller played at a different level than any other guard not named Gill in Kern County. I think you had Gill, who's honestly maybe like a tweener with his size between guard and forward. And then with Waller, you had someone who was truly special watching him score the basketball, whether it's with his jump shot or with his way around the rim.
Mm-hmm. He's just special. I mean, the kids, point guard, combo guard, whatever you want to label him, I mean, his ability to – they needed him to be a scorer this year, you know, and – you know, he's battled two seasons of injuries, and for him to come out this year and really just put a stamp on his senior season and be that guy, league co-MVP with his teammate Gabe, but just had some huge games. He had 30 against Heritage Christian in the game they lost the other night, 32, I believe, against Buchanan. I mean, just, you know, some big games this year that I think a lot of people were curious, health-wise, if he can stay that way, can he put up the numbers? And I had no doubt. I mean, I've known the kid since fourth grade or something like that. And he's just absolute workhorse, you know what I mean? And so great to see him be able to have a phenomenal senior season.
Yeah, good basketball family as well, the Wallers. Now, of the five on your second team, who's the most likely to be first team next year?
Oh, man. I think Dalen Felder.
Yeah, I agree too. He's on my second team, but he is asking to be on the first team with the big year next year. And he's only a sophomore, so he could have two first team selections, junior and senior year at Bullard.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I was kind of torn. Matter of fact, you want to go to the third team, and then because there's some kind of notes I wanted to compare on those two.
Yeah, so let me do my third team because I also have Logan Kilbert on the third team, along with Caden Lopes from Lemoore, who scored 35 on Clovis West in his last high school game. Mm-hmm. Julius Olerewaju ends up on my third team, but honestly, you can make the argument that he gets in over Jackson or Javier on the second team. I just gave Jackson the love because anytime Clovis West needed a big offensive game, I thought he showed up. Javier won a section title for Dinuba, was their best player. But Julius ends up on the third team. He's the most likely over his career to end up on the first team as well. And then I had Javon Bragg and Chris Boudreau to round out my third team all section.
Okay. Yeah, I had I put Javance Coleman on there.
Okay.
I had Connor Sheets from Buchanan.
Oh, good pick. Yeah.
Keon Hill from Hoover. I thought his presence just changed. Hoover was a totally different team after he came on to the varsity.
A freshman. So you're talking about a freshman on the third. One of the top 15 players. Sophomore. Pamir is the freshman.
Yeah.
A sophomore. Okay. Well, still, I mean, how about the youth movement in Hoover High School, having two guys that are dudes that are, what, under 16 years old?
Yeah, exactly. And then I had Nate Becerra from North, their big guy, and then Jackson Young. And I think I actually forgot to move one of them down to honorable mention. But I had Ray Brown in the mix, too.
Okay.
But I thought Ray just had a really solid season. I know they had an up-and-down year, but I saw them quite a bit. And he was really the one consistent variable for them. Whether they were having good games or not, I thought he was consistent. He hit big shots for them. But if I had to, you know, take him off, it would be Javance Coleman, Connor Sheets, Keon Hill, Jackson Young, and Nate Becerra from North High.
I love how different our lists are. And Nate Becerra, I think, is on the door, you know, knocking like probably one of the biggest snubs of this three teams of all section. We're talking to Paul Hernandez of Nothing But Net magazine. we also have awards to give out. I mean, my coach of the year, I cheated. I said co-coach of the year between Hoover's Tazel Archie and Clovis East, Adrian Wiggins. They both won with young talent and losing their best player over the offseason. Hoover lost Darion King, and Clovis East lost Dalen Felder. But they both managed to win important games and go far in the playoffs.
I like that, man. You know, and I had posted something about that earlier, I think on Twitter this year, about Tazel. I mean, just, again, the consistency. You know, he did some things with Keon Hill that I think had a lot of people questioning, why is he not on varsity right now? I think he was starting off on JV. And, you know, he just does a great job with his program. You know, and then to see how they just took off the second half of the season, you know. And so, but I'm going to be honest, like, I kind of went with the probably obvious one with Tony Amundsen.
Yeah.
I think just what they were able to accomplish this year. You know, I mean, it's like the duh, but at the same time, for them to be able to go into that division, you know, the Division One, I almost said Open Division, Division One section championship game, and the way they, you know, they put a whole new game plan together, for their players to execute, the consistency, the extremely rugged schedule they played this year. You know, they took some bad L's early and had a lot of people, including myself, kind of doubting whether they would be able to really hang with, you know, what at the time I thought was Clovis West, St. Joe's three-peat, you know what I mean, type scenario, or trilogy type scenario. And for them to just accomplish consistently, you know, and then to be in the Open Division and get a win over Branson, who's an extremely, you know, tough team that they had already played once this year. I you know, what they were able to do and what they were able to get out, again, getting Connor back this year, I think with, you know, the kind of knock I think has been that, yeah, Clovis North is really good, but they haven't won a section. Or, you know, they kind of don't, they kind of peak early or whatever. And so to see what they were able to do this year, to me, I think it's just a kudos to Tony and honestly the whole staff, to be real. Jones as well, all the assistant coaches, I think, is do a great job of executing. And so that's why I have Tony as coach of the year for me. But Archie definitely is right there for me as well, too.
Now, here's a fun what-if scenario about Clovis North. So they were given the number one seed, which means they didn't have to face West or Joe's in the semifinals. But let's say Joe's was given the one seed that they deserved, and then it was North 2, West 3. I don't know if it's supposed to be West 2 or North 3. I don't know what it would have been. But North would have to beat West a second time. I think it might be harder for North to beat West a second time than to beat St. Joe's just one time. Am I crazy in saying that North getting the one seed play to their benefit because they faced St. Joe's in the finals without having to face Clovis West again?
No, 100%. I think they, I mean, it was when those rankings or when the seedings came out, it was they had the easier path, obviously. Even on the other side, you had Centennial, you had San Joaquin Memorial. I mean, you had four teams that were going to be tough outs for anybody. I mean, Centennial gave St. Joe's a heck of a game.
Yeah.
They were down by, I think, two or three going into the fourth quarter. So they definitely had, and I'm not saying easy, but the easier side of it, having to go against your rival again and depending on where the game was at, because the last 2 years, that's proven to be the winner. The home team has gotten the win in league play. And so if they would have been at the two seed, and that speaks again to the strength of schedule that they had this year that allowed them to be up there. And I had text Frank Burleson, who's a national scout, well-known in the basketball world. I texted him and a couple others after the game, the section championship game, the score, and I was like, wow, major upset. And he said, not really a major upset, you know. And so, and he's seen both those teams play. And so I think it just, again, also I feel like St. Joe's was so hyped about the Clovis West game because a lot of the banter back and forth.
Yeah.
That I don't, it just didn't seem, I ended up, I had to leave on Saturday and I wasn't able to stay for all the section games on Saturday. I had some family emergency, but I watched the game on NFHS and it was just, the same fire didn't even seem to be there. And again, that's to all credit being to what Clovis North executed, but I almost felt like St. Joe's kind of felt like their title game mentality was against Clovis West. You know what I mean? And, So, yeah, you're not wrong. I mean, that one seed truly benefited them because, and again, Bullard not having Javance Coleman, you know what I mean? And so not having the full roster they needed, they lost, and then they end up playing against Clovis East, a team that they knew they could beat, you know what I mean, type of thing. So Yeah, I mean, I think if they were the 2 seed and they're at home, I think they still probably get the win. But having to play at Clovis West for a second time in a matter of 2 weeks would have been definitely a tough challenge.
All right, Paul, let's run through these quickly. Other awards, did you have a defensive player of the year?
Yeah, I did, and I went with Stickman. I went with DJ Stickman. I just think his perimeter defense is phenomenal. There's a couple other guys that popped into mind, but just when I see him play, the way he defends the perimeter and just turns the offense and defense, he's just the guy that stuck out.
I went with Jordan Espinoza, who anytime he needed a guard, the other team's best player, he did it. Yeah. He guarded Tunde. He guarded, I forget his name, from Branson. He's the Illinois commit.
Jace Butler.
There you go, Jace Butler. He guarded him, held him to, I think, under 10 points. So I went with Espinoza. I also wondered if you had, like, a most improved player.
Yeah, man. I mean, to me, I don't know if this is an easy one to go to again because he missed all last year. I kind of put comeback player of the year. I didn't
there
have
you go.
Most improved. I put comeback player of the year. So for me, it would be Connor. But you had mentioned, who did you mention earlier?
About most improved player?
Yeah.
I don't know if I mentioned him yet, but I went with Lucas Jones. I said Lucas Jones needed to be like a really good scorer this year. I think last year he also took a step forward without Connor. He needed to take on a bigger role, and he did. But I thought Lucas played really well in a lot of the playoff games. And then he didn't have his best game against St. Joe's, but then he came back against Branson and lit them up with all his jumpers. I thought Lucas Jones was one of the most improved players. I gave him the nod as well. And I feel like there's multiple multiple players that could be most improved, honestly. But I went with Lucas. And real quick, freshman of the year, I know I didn't ask you for this, but, I mean, there's a bunch of guys.
Not
Asher Thompson.
Yeah.
A.J. Johnson. Kobe Postas.
Kobe Posa, yeah. I like all those. And I would say you got to throw Ethan Staines in there from North High, the point guard as well.
Yeah.
He's just had to have some big games this year. But I like that group. And then also Xander Jensen at Redwood.
Pamir Olivier.
He had a great season. I think there's some really good freshmen, man. And that 26-27 class is a lot of fun. So I think it's – but those – I would have those same ones. If I had to choose one of all of them, I would probably go with A.J. Johnson just because he put up some really good numbers. They relied on him a lot. But, again, what Asher Thompson did was big time, too, for Clovis East this year. Xander Jensen had a phenomenal season. Ethan Sains from North High had a great year as well, and they're still playing. So I think there's a few guys you could put in the mix in there and it makes for an entertaining freshman class.
Paul Hernandez of Nothing But Net Magazine was the only guy I could go to for something like this, right? A guy who followed the whole section so closely, went to a lot of the Bakersfield games, drove up to Fresno for the big Fresno County games. Of course, I had to talk to Paul H. one more time on the show about the all-section teams. Thank you for coming on all these times, man. Greatly appreciate it.
I appreciate you, Gabe. Yep, I'll be in touch, man, and good luck with the next endeavor, brother.
All right, we're out of time. We'll do better the next time. We only have two more times. Tomorrow at 3, listen in when Home Field Advantage continues.